Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Leo.
We're here tonight to bring you some news and to play an interview that we had yesterday, Tuesday evening. Now, I'm not sure which interview Leo is going to bring you. We had two people on. We had our regular guest, John Brennan, and we also had on an author whom we...
Yeah, we're going to, I think we're going to have Jim Rubens.
Okay.
And we got a couple of interesting articles here to bring up. I thought we could read tonight, too. We didn't get a chance to talk about last night.
Oh, this was one that I thought was really important.
Yeah.
This is from URK.info.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry I didn't get a chance to read it on the show. Destroying Indigenous Populations. The Fort Laramie Treaty once guaranteed the Sioux Nation the right to a large area of their original land, which spanned several states, and included their sacred Black Hills, where they were to have the absolute and undisturbed use and occupation of the land. However, when gold was discovered in the Black Hills, President Ulysses S. Grant told the Army to look the other way in order to allow gold miners to enter the territory. After repeated violations of the exclusive rights to the land by gold prospectors and by migrant workers crossing the reservation borders, the U.S. government seized the Black Hills land in 1877. Charmaine Whiteface, an Oglala Tutuwan who lives on the Pine Ridge Reservation, is the spokesperson for the Teuton Sioux Nation Treaty Council, established in 1893 to uphold the terms of the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868. She is also the coordinator of the voluntary group Defenders of the Black Hills that work to preserve and protect the environment where they live. "We call gold the metal which makes men crazy," Whiteface told Truth Out while in New York to attend the annual Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues at the United Nations in late May. "Knowing they could not conquer us like they wanted, because when you're fighting for your life or the life of your family, you'll do anything you can. Or fighting for some place sacred like the Black Hills, you do whatever you can. So they had to put us in prisoner of war camps. I come from POW Camp 344, the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. We want our treaties upheld. We want our land back. Most of the Sioux land has been taken, and what remains has been laid waste by radioactive pollution. Nothing grows in these areas. Nothing can grow. They're too radioactive," Whiteface said. "Although the Black Hills and adjoining areas are sacred to the indigenous peoples and nations of the region, their attempts at reclamation are not based on religious claims, but on the provisions of the Constitution. The occupation of indigenous land by the U.S. government is in direct violation of its own law," according to Whiteface. "There is uranium all around the Black Hills, South and North Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana. Mining companies came in and dug large holes through these lands to extract uranium in the 1950s and 1960s, prior to any prohibitive regulations. Abandoned uranium mines in the southwestern South Dakota number 142 in the Cave Hills area, another sacred place in the South Dakota used for vision quests and burial sites. There are 89 abandoned uranium mines. In an essay called Native North America, The Political Economy of Radioactive Colonialism, political activist Ward Churchill and Winona LaDuke state that former U.S. President Richard Nixon declared the 1868 treaty territory a natural sacrifice area, implying that the territory and its people were being sacrificed to uranium and nuclear radiation. The worst part, according to Whiteface, is that none of these abandoned mines has ever been marked. They never filled them up. They never capped them. There are no warning signs, nothing. The Forest Service even advertises the Picnic Springs campground as a tourist place. It's about a mile from the Cave Hills uranium mines. The Black Hills and its surroundings are the recharge area for several major aquifers in the South Dakota, Nebraska, and Wyoming regions. The crises can be gauged from the simple description that Whiteface gives. When the winds come, they pick up uranium dust and carry it. When it rains or it snows, it washes it down into the aquifers in the groundwater. Much of this radioactive contamination then finds its way into the Missouri River. She informs us that 12 residents out of about 600 of the sparsely populated county of Cave Hills have developed brain tumors. A nuclear physicist has declared one mine in the area to be as radioactively hot as ground zero of Hiroshima. Red Shirt, a village along the Cheyenne River on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, had its water tested high for radiation, and local animals have died after consuming fish from the river. After three daughters of a family and the mother died of cancer, a family requested Whiteface to have the municipal water tested. The radiation levels were found to be equal to those inside an X-ray machine. Little wonder, then, that the surviving sons and their father are afflicted with disease. People procuring their grain and cattle from the region are advised to be extra cautious. One cannot but feel the desperation of a people when Whiteface bemoans, "It's pure genocide for us. We are all dying from cancer. We are trying to not become extinct, not to let the great Sioux Nation become extinct." The Ogallala Sioux are engaged in an ongoing legal battle with the pro-uranium state of South Dakota. They are aware of the unequal nature of their battle, but they cannot afford to give up. Other tribes, such as the Navajo and the Hopi in New Mexico, have been exposed to radioactive materials as well. Furthermore, the July 16, 1979 spill of 100 million gallons of radioactive water containing uranium tailings from a tailing pond in the north arm of the Rio Paroco near the small town of Church Rock, New Mexico, also affected indigenous peoples in Arizona. Her rage and grief are evident as Whiteface laments, "When we have our prayer gatherings and we ask that no young people come to attend, if you want to have children, don't come to Cave Hills because it's too radioactive." The exploitative approach to the planet's resources and peoples that led to these environmental and health disasters collides with Whiteface's values. "I always say that you have to learn to live with the earth and not the domination of the earth." The U.S. government practices another approach. In occupied Iraq and Afghanistan, uranium that has caused genocide of sorts at home has proceeded to wreak havoc, a new one. Let me just turn the page here. Whoops, give me a second. Two Iraqi NGOs, the Monitoring Team Net of Human Rights in Iraq and the Conservation Center of Environment and Reserves in Fallujah, have extensively documented the effects of restricted weapons such as depleted uranium munitions against the people of Fallujah during two massive U.S. military assaults on the city in 2004. In March 2008, the NGOs were to present a report titled "Prohibited Weapons Crisis, the Effects of Pollution on the Public Health in Fallujah" to the 7th session of the United Nations Human Rights Council. Mohammed Al-Jaraji, director of MHRI and president CCERF, was to present the report with an appeal. "We are kindly asking the High Commissioner for Human Rights to look at the content of the report in accordance with General Assembly Resolution 48/141, paragraph 4 of the 20th December 1993, to investigate the serious threat to health rights in Fallujah and Iraq and to relay the results of this investigation to the Commission on Human Rights to take the suitable decisions. Let me just skip a little bit here. Oh, Dr. Najim begins the report by noting that coalition forces, mostly U.S., used 350 tons of depleted uranium weapons in about 45 days in 1991, primarily in the stretch of Iraq northwest of Kuwait, where Iraqi troops were on their retreat. Then in 2003, during the shock and awe bombing of Baghdad, the U.S. used another 150 tons of depleted uranium. He says that cancer is spreading from the conflict area as a health epidemic and will get worse. The cancer rate has more than tripled over the last 16 years in Najaf. Let's see. There's more to this article. But let me just jump here. The importance of this information confirms that there is a big disaster in the city. They're talking about in Iraq. The main civilian victims of most illnesses were the children, and the rates of them represent 72% of total illnesses cases of 2006, most of them between the ages of 1 month and 12 years. Many new types and terrible amounts of illnesses started to appear from 2006 until now, such as congenital spinal cord abnormalities, congenital renal abnormalities, septicemia, meningitis, thalassemia, as well as a significant number of undiagnosed cases at different ages. The pollution after 1 year of military operations refers to the use of a great amount of prohibited weapons used in 2004 battles. The continued pollution may be well lead to a genetic drift starting to appear with many abnormalities in children. Because the problems were related to the exposure of the child's parents to pollution sources, and this may lead to more new abnormalities in the future. According to the security situation, with many checkpoints and irregular cards to allow civilians to enter or exit the city until now, all this helps to continue the terrible situation for this time. Therefore, we think that all of these data is only 50% of the real numbers of illnesses. The Sioux tell their youth to avoid their radioactive native lands if they wish to procreate and prosper. Those in Iraq have no option but to lead main lives in their native land. I edited this while I was reading because it was so long. It's 9 pages. But it's really sad, and it's Americans that are behind that.
Yeah.
We polluted the lands in our own country.
And we've
polluted
the lands all around the world.
And then we moved on to pollute the lands other places.
Right. I mean, we're 6% of the population of the world, and we use over 25% of its energy. And we just trash and burn. You know?
It seems that with no conscience.
No. And all this global warming bullshit and all this other stuff, it's just another means to, divert us from the real problem, which is, greed, pollution, genocide,
we've got it. Exactly.
And stealing lands. Here's another great theft that's going on, and it's Goldman Sachs. Staff can look forward to the biggest bonus payout in the firm's 140-year history.
Wow.
Yeah, Goldman to make record bonus payout. Surviving banks are accused of undermining stability. The staff of Goldman Sachs can look forward to the biggest bonus payouts in 140-year history after a spectacular first half of the year.
and sparking concerns that the big investment banks, which survived the credit crunch, will derail financial regulation reforms. Now, there's a catch to this. Okay, a lack of competition and surges in revenue from trading foreign currency, bonds, and fixed income products has set profits at Goldman Sachs soaring, according to insiders at the firm. Staff in London were briefed last week on the banking and securities company's prospects and told that it could look forward to bumper bonuses if, as predicted, it completed its most profitable year ever. And figures next month derailing the firm's second quarter earnings are expected to show a further jump in profits. Warren Buffett bought $5 billion of the company's shares in January, has already made a $1 billion gain on his investment.
Wow.
Yeah. And Goldman is expected to be the biggest winner in the races for revenues that in 2006 reached $186 billion across the entire industry. While this figure is expected to fall to $160 billion in 2009, it will be split among the smaller number of firms. Barclays Capital, Credit Suisse, and Deutsche Bank are among the European firms expected to register bumper profits along the U.S. banks, J.P. Morgan and Morgan Stanley, following the near collapse and government rescue of major trading houses, including Citigroup, Merrill Lynch, UBS, and Royal Bank of Scotland. In April, Goldman said it would set aside half of its $1.2 billion first quarter profits to reward its staff, much of it in bonuses. It is believed to have paid 973 bankers $1 million or more last year. And while this year's payouts are on track to be the highest for most of the bank's 28,000 staff, including about 5,400 in London. Critics of the bonus culture in the city said the dominance of a few risk-taking investment banks is undermining the efforts of regulators to stabilize the financial system. But Vince Gable, the Liberal Democrat Treasury spokesman, said the investment banks, more than any other institution, created the culture of excessive leverage, excessive risk, and excessive bonuses that led to the downfall of the financial system. Now they are cashing in, and the same bonus culture has returned. The result must be that we are being pushed to the edge of another crash. And Goldman Sachs said it reviewed its bonus scheme last year and switched from a system of guaranteed rewards that were paid over 3 years to variable payments that tied staff to the firm. It told employees last year that profit-related bonuses would be delayed by 12 months. But until the release of its first quarter profits in April, it seemed inconceivable that a firm that owed the U.S. government $10 billion would be looking to break all records, all-time records in 2009. I mean, we paid these bastards $10 billion.
I know.
Right? You know, to bail these bastards out. And now here's the kicker. Here's the real kick. David Williams, investment banking analyst at Fox Pitt Kilton, said, "This year is shaping up to be the best year ever for investment banks, or at least those that have emerged relatively unscathed from the credit crisis. These banks are intermediaries in the bond markets, where government and companies are raising billions of pounds of new money. There is also a lack of competition that means that they can charge huge sums for doing business. Last week, the firm predicted that President Obama's government could issue $3.25 trillion of debt before September. $3.25 trillion of debt before September, on almost four times last year's sum. And Goldman, a prime broker of U.S. government bonds, is expected to make hundreds of millions of dollars in profits from selling and dealing in the bonds." So,
unbelievable.
So not only are these bastards, did we have to bail these bastards out, but these bastards are going to be paying themselves billions of dollars, okay, in bonuses and everything else, okay, because with they're collecting, they're selling more bonds, more treasury bonds, okay, to the people. So they're ripping the people off twice. I mean, it's just, oh, man. And they're getting away with it. This is all part of Obama's grand freaking scheme, okay, of ripping off the American people, these goddamn banks. All right? It's just amazing to me how they get away with it.
I don't know how they get away with it.
They just continue, and nobody gives a crap, and nobody, you know, it's just, nobody understands. They're not telling you. They just let it go, you know, and, you know, I got this from Snardfarker, snardfucker.nig.com. Imagine that. I had to go to Snardfucker to get this damn thing.
Jeez.
All right? I mean, that's how, you know.
They don't seem to care very much, Leo.
No, Snard, S-N-A-R-D, Farker, Farker.nig.com. Okay? So, you know, you have to go to that one. Okay, some remote freaking thing in order to get a major, major, major news item. Just unbelievable how censored this system really is. And there's one more before I bring up. I'm going to do John's, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Our interview tonight is going to be with John Brennan, our environmental reporter.
Oh, you decided not to put
it. Yeah, it was so very good, actually. He had some very good stuff on there.
Well, both of those interviews were good.
But this was the first one, so if you don't mind, I'd like to play that one.
Okay. Are you going to play the book interview tomorrow night, maybe?
No, I may not play that one. But this one was... John's had a lot of information on it that I really...
That people might want to trace down.
That people should
yeah.
check out, yeah. There's just one more I thought I'd throw in. Maybe you want to read that one?
Sure. If it's not too small, I can...
Yeah, I'll read it. Can you see it?
Yeah, just barely.
I can read it.
I think you're going to have to read
okay.
The light's not very good.
Okay. Israel to jumpstart its settlement expansion.
Yeah, I read that. That was very disturbing.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting, though, is Israel is to allocate $250 million to further expand its settlements in the occupied West Bank territories over the next 2 years, despite international objections. The figure is contained in the 2009-2010 budget, which passed its first reading in the Knesset parliament last week, Army Radio said Sunday. The move by the Knesset comes despite calls by the international community, including Tel Aviv's staunch ally Washington, to Israel to halt its settlement expansion. Some $125 million is to be used for various security expenses, and most of the rest allocated to housing construction.
Mm.
The radio and the piece now anti-settlement watchdog. The piece now anti-settlement watchdog has declared that the settlements, depending on the two-year budget, could be as far higher than that by spreading over several sections of the budget. The official figures are nothing but the tip of the iceberg, and the Israelis will pay not only a political price for the settlements, but also an economic one. The head of the group, Yari Oppenheimer, said, Israel's two-year, $159 billion budget must pass two more readings in the Knesset, and Israeli settlement activities have been described as the main obstacle in the way of the peace process.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still pushing the damn thing through. They're still defying our Obama's mandates, and they don't give a damn.
No.
So they continue to build.
And we continue to give them thousands of
all
dollars.
All we
got to
do is cut off the blood money, for crying out loud.
And then maybe we could take that money and get health care for our people.
Instead of paying health care for Israeli people, you know.
In Taiwan
and
people
everybody
else
in the freaking world except ourselves.
So you have the interview?
Yeah, I got the interview.
Okay. Good.
So this interview is with John Brennan, our environmental reporter, and he talks about chemtrails, but he also brings up tonight, he talks about Global 2000 and population reduction, as well as he has a few excellent clips, video clip or audio clips in this report, and explaining conspiracies and ongoing conspiracies. One is by President Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, talking about the secret groups and the secret societies that that are a danger and a threat to the world as well as to the United States. And this is about a half an hour or so or more. So I hope you enjoy this and hope it plays all the way through.
Got it. Hi, Leo, and good evening, Lila.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. You got some good stuff for us, I hear.
Yeah, I've got a couple of audio clips.
Excellent.
I'm not going to do my American Skywatch public service announcement tonight. I'm just going to go straight into the chemtrail issue, a quick piece on that, and I'll move on to something else.
Okay, go right ahead, John.
Again, you know, we like to keep this issue as high profile as we can, thanks to your show. Okay, we have had how many days, maybe 11, 12 days now without hardly seeing any sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
And other parts of the country, of course, are baking. I mean, Florida is having obnoxious heat, which normally it doesn't. You know, they get up around 90 because it's a narrow state and the, you know, the winds blow from coast to coast quite easily. But on the Weather Channel this morning, people are absolutely overwhelmed with the heat down there. It's like desert temperatures. I personally believe that that's what happens when you do tamper with the weather, which is a subject we talk about on this segment of the show every week, every Tuesday night, the LA Steel Radio talk show. And it's, well, much to do with weather modification, military aspects of it, also known as environmental modification. And we have the subject called chemtrails, which are those rather large streaks being left behind by military and commercial jets. Aluminized powders, barium salts, various other toxins right into our skies, right in broad daylight when we have blue skies, and it turns into synthetic cloud. And for all the naysayers, there's plenty of good videos out there. And in fact, I found a few recently up on YouTube, and I'll maybe give you those at the end of the show. In fact, I can give it to you now. There's a, if you go up on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
if you've got a pen, I'll give this out again. It's the first recorded chemtrail, and then you put a question mark, 1958. That phrase might get you to it. First recorded chemtrail, 1958, on YouTube. And it's Alan Watt narrates the piece there. It actually shows a small, small aircraft. It is an older jet, right in the back of the jet, turning the spray on and off. And they were spraying at the time over Great Britain off the shore, and you know that's a whole other subject what they were doing. But it has been done. They sprayed the populations many, many times around the world. And now I'm going to get into something else. Well, it's related to it, but it's basically a little thing called 10 questions about chemtrails. I kind of want to ask these questions. Why isn't the American Academy of Environmental Medicine not looking at the impact of particulate matter, much caused by the toxicity of chemtrail nanofiber-coated aluminum that we are breathing with each breath? Their scheduled October 2009 conference, which was known Body Under Siege, Inflammation and Autoimmunity, it does not address this urgent issue at all. The U.S. Air Force has admitted using it. How much of the human comatose or denial behavior, whatever you like to call it, basically, isn't actually now being caused by the toxicity and of this nano-coated fibers that we're seeing in the chemtrails? They're basically an aluminum. And the military also has used something called chaff, and that was even shown on a very close-up video of the airline doing it on the Discovery Channel one night. I mean, basically, I'm just trying to get this stuff out to people because I want people to just go and search out that the weather is being messed with. That's the main thing. Now, there's another aspect of the deterioration of people's cognitive functioning. And Americans are poorly educated and somewhat less educated than the Europeans on a whole. Now, I mean, if you take in Mississippi and, you know, it's just a huge population here, it's very hard to educate them all equally. So it's easy to manipulate this population through what I call Orwellian doublespeak and fear when millions of people get their news or what I call infotainment from a carefully orchestrated media, which, well, I guess 85% anyway, of which is controlled by about five corporations. So it's basically like back in Rome, bread and circus. You know, it masks the rapid collapse of our country. People are just not seeing these things as clearly as they should. Billions, possibly billions, of infants and young children are now afflicted with a variety of chronic upper respiratory illness, such as asthma, chronic bronchitis, hard-to-treat pneumonia. And even now, with these epidemic levels, this is not reported as such by the mainstream corporate-controlled media. And basically, as I said to a friend of mine, you know, that breathing is now deleterious to your health. You know, this in itself speaks volumes. But the children are suffering, and I have met people who are really kind of confused what's happening to their kids, and I try and explain to them, you know, that there is stuff in the entrenched in our air at this time. So I want to know, why are parents not demanding answers to their children's illnesses caused by these environmental poisons? The pharmaceutical drugs sometimes may alleviate the symptoms, or sometimes they make them worse, but they definitely do not cure the problems, you know. As Bill Moyers, the guy you see on Friday nights there, or he used to be on television Friday night, I don't know if he's there anymore, he just wrote something a few days ago. How can we expect an industry to profit from disease and sickness to police itself? You know, why do we not demand prevention? Why is every citizen self-testing to see if they have Morgellons, the disease, you know, which is linked to the exposure of chemtrails? It's fibers coming out in various parts of the body. People might just think it's a little blister, but there's something more going on there. Again, that's been on CNN a few times. I'm trying to think what else I can really add here. There is an emerging field of environmental cardiology, and how many cardiologists actually know what chemtrails are? I bet hardly any. I could go around Torrington to all the cardiology department, but they just laugh at me. Now, why is this discipline not looking at the link between the dangerous levels of barium in chemtrail aerosols and the dramatic increase in cardiac illnesses? Barium is known to damage the heart. I've come across these studies many, many places. Why are we all not demanding prevention and precautionary principle, meaning first do no harm? How many Americans even know what the precautionary principle is? Unless you're reading some medical books, you probably wouldn't be aware of that. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is the Geneva Convention, the very core of international human law and the U.S. laws, all forbid the use of humans as uninformed test subjects. Well, I would say the chemtrails constitute a big kind of break of that. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, and we certainly haven't paid much attention to that. We've tested on our own population without their consent.
Yeah, you know, we all have the basic human right to breathe air that isn't filled with deadly brews of aerosols.
Mm-hmm.
Target not just humans,
you know better.
Weapons and thousands of other
stuff. You know better than that, John. We have no right to breathe air.
Well,
we don't have the right to clean water.
You're paying for it with carbon taxes. You know, what's your carbon footprint,
right?
You know, with this so-called contrived global warming scam that Al Gore and his Enron friends came up with to tax the global population?
Yeah, your carbon footprint.
What's your carbon footprint? Yeah, they've shown the video by Al Gore, an inconvenient truth, to all the kids in school, not just in science class. It's being actually shown in mathematics classes. They are drumming it into the kids, and, you know, they're going to be a whole new generation falling for the scam of that.
I got to tell you, the kids are a hell of a lot brighter than you give them credit for.
You know, you're a teacher, and so you may be right, but I hope they're seeing through the forest. But it's very difficult because, you know, the younger people will trust what they're told in school.
They don't. No, they honestly don't.
You don't. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
I've seen a tremendous. I work in the school system as well as Lila does, but I see that they don't. Okay, trust.
Questioning more and more.
Yeah, they don't. They just.
I think the internet and YouTube is they're available to kids, and they're very sophisticated today.
Oh, God, yeah.
Good. Yeah. Well,
they have access to more.
Still thinking of how I was educated, and they tried to drum in stuff to me in history class, which when I look back on it now, I've still got copies of some of the old history books. When I look at the curriculum, anyway, it was utter bunkum.
It's still a lot of the same, but what I'm saying is that about current events, about regular general life in itself, kids aren't as dumb as we were, you know.
Right.
Well, we didn't have access to the tools that they have today.
That made me feel a little better. You guys are, because I've been reading stuff that they're saying that some of the kids are getting very brainwashed by a lot of what they're being brought up to be. green Nazis, sort of say, to be kind of too rough on them to say
Some are. I'm sure some are, but some kids are brought up to be devout Catholics, and some are devout fundamentalists, and you know, some are 10-year-old evangelists and stuff like that. So you know, that you're always going to get your extreme. But for the most part, from what I see, the kids are much, much brighter about things today than they,
Than we were.
I mean, they're more savvy about stuff. I mean, you just can't...
Well, they have the tools to check things out.
Yeah.
And a lot of them do have the time, and they have the tools.
And the problem is, too, is being a teacher today is tough because, I mean, you got to be right on about a lot of things because kids look at you like, hey...
And then they look it up.
And then they bring it in. And then they confront you with it.
Yeah, there's one thing I have found that I don't agree with. They will tend to be told, look everything up on Wikipedia. And Wikipedia has been exposed. I showed you something at the weekend when I met you for a little while about Wikipedia being exposed as a CIA.
Well, we just read an article tonight on 911.
It mentioned Wikipedia?
Oh, yeah, but Wikipedia was wikied, they call it, I guess.
Yeah.
When by American Airlines, somebody from American Airlines actually switched their story.
Information on the flight.
Yeah, that's the trouble. You can't switch the information there. It's a complete farce, but I've read stories.
Yeah, but John, wait. Listen to what they switched it to. They were saying somebody from American Airlines switched it to the official story that.
The official story originally was that there were two flights.
77 and 11.
77 and 11 that hit the Twin Tower and the Pentagon.
Right.
They changed it and said that there were no flights that day.
Right. There were no. There was no flight 11 or 77.
On September 11th.
By American Airlines.
And they
proved, this article proved that the switch on Wikipedia was done by American Airlines.
They traced it back.
Yep.
Traced it back to who did the switch, and it was American Airlines.
The records kept by the Bureau of Transportation Statistics do not list the flights either for that day.
Wow. That's a story I hadn't come
around.
That's
great. That's breaking news. That's on...
Existentialist Cowboy.
Yeah.
.blogspot.com.
I would think InfoWars might have that up by now.
Yeah, I'm going to check it afterwards.
But that's
good. You know, I always said sooner or later there will be some whistleblowers will come out and the 9/11 hoax... it's a hoax, it might be, but it might not be the wrong word. I guess it is.
Now that the Bush people are out of power, now they can come out and say things. They can come out without being...
Fear of being
killed.
Taken away.
Yeah.
That's right. We have Richard Gage coming out as well, all the architects. Anyway, I'm going off subject here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Time here. We've got 15 more minutes, I think. I have I'm going to kind of skip the rest of what I was going to say on the chemtrails here. I think I've given you the gist of what I wanted to say on the subject, given the short time that I have. There was this audio clip I'd like to play, and it's about a whistleblower who was very high up in the government circles, hung around with all of the senators, congressmen, going right back to the Jimmy Carter regime. He was a former, his name is George Green, he's a former investment banker, and he had an experience that just turned him right off all these guys. And he was a ruthless type of character. He even explains that he had a background in the meat cutting industry, and he had no regard for human life or didn't care as long as he was just cold-blooded. But he finally has spoken out, and I'm going to play this clip for you if I can bring it up here. Let's see if we can.
Yeah, it was very good.
Was it off YouTube or?
No, it's off another channel I came across.
Okay.
I don't even know what the name is. I have it queued up here right now. It's about 10 minutes, so
okay, go ahead.
It's very interesting. So listen carefully. If you think your leaders are really honest and love you, the type of people that are really in government are not what you think they are.
And
this man explains it.
And we also mentioned, it also talks about Global 2000.
Yes, it does,
which was a population plan.
You can just Google in that. We need to get into the. There's a lot of mumbo-jumbo sites out there, but the real meat and potato parts of what was in the original Global 2000. That goes back to like 1980s.
Yeah, with Carter administration.
It's a very, very nasty piece, and they meant business. is about depopulating the world, including Africa, by starving them to death.
It was started up by Kissinger and Brzezinski.
That's right.
Right?
Them guys are still around.
Yeah, and on top of that, it went on to signed off by Carter and finalized by Ronald Reagan. Signed off by Ronald Reagan,
yep.
The Global 2000 Report on Human Population Reduction.
And it's been followed up since by Agenda 21, and they're both still going strong. Anyway, let me just clip right to this, and let's do it right now.
The problem is the monopoly game, which is controlled by the Federal Reserve, the private bank, which is actually controlled out of London, is manipulating all the dollars to put more and more people into debt. So the illusion of equity they have in real estate is coming apart. The players that are analyzing everything are expecting massive foreclosures next year and the beginning of what we call the recession it's going to be worse than 29. It's your house.
Yes.
It's your living room.
Yes, that's
you own it.
You don't. Right.
You have contractual right to transfer the airspace subject to you paying taxes to the state.
Right.
Or the Global 2000 discussions that we had. The real problem that they have, as Kissinger says, is there's just too many people on the planet. And 40% of the world, 2 billion of us, exist on less than $2 a day. The summary of the Global 2000 report I put up on my website, nohopes.com, but if you look at it, it makes sense to get rid of people. So they said, they're going to make godlike decisions on who lives and who dies. Now, obviously, some of the meetings we sat on, we were planning on using neutron bombs on the major cities. Because that contains most of what they call...
You actually heard this?
I said it on the meetings. I was in the game
big time.
In fact, I was making such a mess, they decided rather than kill me, which they could, they just invited me into the inner group and asked me to be the finance chairman. At that point, I probably would have been Secretary of the Treasury or some whatever they wanted to do with me. So what I was doing prior to that, making it right, I would volunteer to become a president of a company, and I'd go in and liquidate it. And we get rid of the expendable containers. That was my job.
Expendable containers meaning human beings?
That's right.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's really inside vernacular, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, well, that's what we used at that time. I mean, it went from there to useless eaters today, so you're happy with it. You're a human resource. So,
right.
Which, all you are is part of the commodity. Even in the business sense, you look at it, you have a cost. Labor, what is labor?
Yeah.
Human resource.
Right.
When you're going to put together some kind of product. Well, the inside of the game, when we started using neutron bombs today, they figured the biologicals are much cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
They're still planning on, the plan is to get a war started in the Middle East, and they're still planning on using a neutron bomb or one of the bombs that they've got developed on Israel, and that's to begin World War III, which is all in the cards. And it's going to happen. They even put a monument up to this whole program. It's called the Georgia Guidestones. Outside of Atlanta, And they've got it all set down there. It's all in eight languages. Basically, it's data complete as far as they're concerned. It's just to get the thing going in the Middle East, and it's not going fast enough. I mean, Carter put this thing in, so we have the Plan 2000 with the war starting in the year 2000 in the Middle East.
Right.
Reduce the population of the planet down to 500 million, have one world currency under the Homeland Security, or FEMA, if you want to call it. They're going to declare an emergency, which are going to shut down everything. My friends, my CIA associates, I don't even call them friends anymore. CIA is crooks in action.
Yeah.
They're all professional liars.
Yeah.
I mean, they got to be if they have that job.
Yeah.
So you have to look at what they're doing. Anyway, they're so concerned, they're leaving the country too. Most of them are going to Latin America. Meanwhile, they're closing in every day right now, just closing in to make it so that we're going to be set up in these enemy prisoner of war camps. I published a book called Chaos in America.
Mm-hmm.
In it, I was asked to build an enemy prisoner of war camp. I put the contract in this book so you can read it for yourself. This is in downtown Las Vegas, right on the railroad tracks. It says enemy prisoner of war camp. They're all on top. They're building them all the way across the United States right now. We signed an executive order taking the old forts and the army places that we shut down to get those organized to hold the so-called dissidents. Now, what's the definition of a dissident? And the problem is that we're going to enslave ourselves because most of the people want to keep having food coming in and you're going to follow the line. You're just locking yourself into your own prison camp. Then we're going to come down to the extermination, just like World War II. Phil and I have lectured together. I know Phil Fire. He's dead now.
I know he's dead. And so what about what he was saying about the number of bases at that time? I think it was 129 bases.
going to do with the rest of the people? They just get rid of them, leave them above ground and be radiated. Now, my son happens to be a nuclear physicist. Mm-hmm. Spent the last 3.5 years in a secret city in Russia. They're about 12 years ahead of us. They have 22,000 nuclear warheads. And, of course, we're the target. The Soviets have 3 nuclear submarines on the west coast and 3 on the east coast. They're about 2 football fields wide, 5 stories tall, and they all are nuclear power and aimed at our major cities.
Okay.
That's what we are. Well, because the plan is the northern hemisphere is where they're going to release the nuclear bombs, and the theory was that the winds from the North Pole that are coming down, because that's increasing drastically,
right,
will go to the equator, and there will be very little spillover because of the reverse of the winds, because of the southern hemisphere.
Okay.
So therefore, the nuclear radiation here will be a lot more than the southern hemisphere.
And this is a fait accompli, you believe?
Oh, they think so. Oh, yeah, they think they've won. That's the reason why they don't bother about me talking about it. They don't care whether you know or not. What are you going to do about it? And you have no idea what China is until you go over there for yourself. With 1.3 billion, you understand, almost, well, a little over 4 times our population.
Right.
It's, you know, I spent some time over there with them and I had some government friends. It's, they think they're going to, what they're going to do is let the West go have its fight. And then they want to clean up. They say it's been 5,000 years. We want to run the world. We want to get through. And what they're doing, acquiring all the assets.
Mm-hmm.
They figure that Canada and the United States, the property there will, the fruit growing areas, will be enough to take care of their people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're looking at. Why are they growing it? They bought it.
Because
oil.
The U.S. will become a resource. Yeah.
Whatever's left of it.
Whatever's left of it, yeah. You seem to be in a unique position to be able to put a fair amount of this together, which is quite interesting.
Well, I walk my talk. I played the game.
You played the game. You know one level of it.
And I know. I used to play around with the world leaders, so I know what they're planning on doing.
What change of heart? What happened in you that made you decide to share this information that happens at the inside level?
Well, it come back to a moral situation that happened to me, I think. When I flew to Aspen. I brought my 2 daughters up there so they could go, you know, go skiing. And when I was invited to this meeting, when I walked into the room, the world leaders were there. That's when they asked me to be the finance chairman. As they said, we'd like you to be the finance chairman for the next president of the United States. And the first thing I asked is, why me? And they said, well, we owe you a favor. Remember I told you I volunteered to be president of the company, so
right.
I went down.
And then you liquidate, yeah.
I didn't charge them anything for it. It was just a game.
I see.
And anyway, that's what they said.
So I thought you'd be good on the team, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be good. I'd be a team player. I just did it because it was, you know, one of these things. So next thing I asked them, I said, well, wait a minute. You know, I just started this $100 million project. And they said, don't worry about it. And we'll put it on ice. And I said, okay, who with? And I said, well, you can do that. Then I said, the next thing was, who is going to be the next president? Now, this is 2 years before he became president.
Right.
They said, Jimmy Carter. And I said, Jimmy who? They said, well, he's Democratic governor of Georgia. And I said, I've been voting Republican. And Paul Volcker said, son, don't worry about it. We control them both.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I got the next question is, what does a finance chairman do?
Yeah.
You know, I haven't been doing that. I've been playing all this other stuff. They said, will you sit down with Ted? And so I sat over with Ted Kennedy. He's sitting right next to me. And Ted and I are talking, you know, he's just joking. He says, George, you're going to love this job. You're really good with money. We're going to send you off to all the state Democratic functions to raise money for the National Democratic Party. And he says, you're going to meet some real flossy ladies. Just then, my daughter walked in. Ted looked at her and he says, wow, I want to go to bed with that. I says, no, you don't, Ted. That's my daughter and she's 14. And his response to me was, I don't care. I was livid. I really didn't know what to do.
So it was that moment,
well,
that personal insult.
That was part of it.
Yeah.
I got up. I walked across the room.
Yeah.
I then talked to Pierre Trudeau and his wife, who was the Prime Minister of Canada at that time. And I'm sitting in front of them with a little half cigar box full of white powder. Okay. I'm looking around the rest of the room. I said, my God, something hit me at that point. If the world leaders have to resort to this, I don't think I want to be part of this thing. I mean, even to the pollution and getting everything else, they're talking about getting rid of all the other people. I mean, I was raised in a packing house and slaughtering animals, and you get to the point where people are just animals at that point. And then I found out a little bit more about the details of the Plan 2000, of the annihilation of the entire planet. I said, I got to stop these people because something. I mean, it's just, they got to be stopped.
Well, there's the Mr. George Green clip, and I think very interesting.
Was there any more to that, John?
No, in fact, that was a series of a longer clip. clip that's put together, you know, so it was a bit choppy there.
Yeah,
it was very good, though.
It was excellent, though. It was quite clear.
Yeah, but it was like when he talked about China right after the other, because, you know, it would be too long to show. It would take an hour and a half to go through the full thing, but those were the really interesting bits that were kind of squashed in together there for the purposes.
And Lila's got another article. I think you're holding that one on the coming thing, the end, the financial.
Oh, I, which one?
That. You didn't read that one yet.
Well, the Journal Scientist was on Russia today, saying similar things about the economy.
Mm-hmm.
They're just putting the band-aid on it right now, making it look all nice. But
the bank holiday. Yeah, there's a bank holiday coming.
That's right, the bank holiday coming.
Yeah.
September again, I think, is it?
Yeah, August or September. Bob Chapman's influential international forecasters.
Yeah, excellent publication.
Yeah, bank holiday plan for late August or September. According to Chapman's sources, U.S. embassies around the world are selling dollars and stockpiling money from respective countries where they operate. Some U.S. embassies worldwide are being advised to purchase massive amounts of local currency.
Bob Chapman, the international forecaster, you could probably find it on the website. Actually, there's a link to it through Jeff Rentz program, Rentz.com.
It's from on InfoWars.
Oh, it's on InfoWars, but
yep.
They don't carry the weekly or monthly, I forget which it is right now, actually. I just read it from time to time,
mm-hmm.
International. With Bob Chapman, anyway.
The international forecaster.
That's right, yeah.
Right.
I lost my train of thought there.
Okay. That's,
but that's what they're saying. That's what they're saying on that too. So.
I thought that was very good, John.
It was quite scary, really, when you think about it.
I know, but you know, when you you and I know, I don't know if a lot of the listeners will ever get it into their heads that 9/11 was absolutely an inside job.
Mm-hmm.
As they do spray us with chemtrails, it's all checkable information. Thousands of DVDs out there, documents in every language.
I think the critical thing to 911.
Yes, it was. It opened a gateway to see
tremendous
scam that they've been probably running for thousands of years, maybe hundreds of thousands. I don't know how far this goes back to.
No, what I'm saying is that it allowed them to create the Patriot Act. It allowed them to do what they're doing. And in the last 8 or 9 years, we have had nothing but a restriction of our liberties.
That's right.
And we're going to wars and everything that this guy said. All right.
Yeah.
And everything we talked about on the show here. Stated it was it was for Caspian Sea. Afghanistan was for the pipeline. It had nothing to do with 9/11 revenge and bull. They needed a reason to attack Afghanistan. They needed a reason to attack Iraq. All right, and now they need a reason to attack Iran. And if they want to get world, this big to do over there, they want to get world support. For their for their regime change,
mm-hmm.
And what better way to do that than have a huge revolution over there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I see we're at the top of the hour. You have to do your station identification, but I was going to give a website for anybody who really wants to study the events of 9/11 on a video study instead of reading hundreds of books, which is difficult, and find out about a lot of everything from Ruby Ridge, Waco, Texas events, in a video form to look at them, make your own decisions. I'm going to give you a website right now that you can watch all the videos for free, and this is hundreds of videos literally, and the website is Conspiracy Reality, not conspiracy theories. Theories are no longer theories when the proof comes in, then it becomes a reality. So it's called conspiracyrealitytv.com. when you get to the main page, along the top of the main page, there's various subjects with all the different topics are there. Go to the section at the top. It says video list. When you click on the video list, you will then see all these videos come up.
Well, that's a great resource for people, John.
And there's really no excuse for not at least having a look. Maybe we're lying to you. Here, check it out. Prove me wrong. After you watch every one of the videos, maybe the first 20, you'll begin to get it.
I would hope they would begin to get it before then. If they don't get it in the first four or five videos, I would think that 5 or 10 more isn't going to help them.
Leo, give a station ID before we continue with John. I wanted to ask him something. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is WQQQ 103.3 FM and Sharon, Lakeville, and Millerton.
John.
And you're listening to the Ali Steele Show with our environmental reporter, John Brennan. Go ahead, Lila.
I wanted to ask you, John, were you aware that NASA is considering bombing the moon?
I did hear something about that. Yeah, I didn't really get much into the story. Is that for real, I mean?
Well, there's two stories up on it already. One I had tonight. One's on rents, but another on ProX. What was it? I had it here.
Yeah, there are a couple of stories out on it. I'm going to read that after our segment with you, but I was wondering if you would...
Examiner.com.
Yeah, I'll check it out. Listen to your story, and I'll try and do some in-depth study on it. But that's an interesting one. For resources or something they're claiming, I suppose?
No. It's pretty bizarre, actually, what they're doing in the experimenting. And they want to,
it's something about trying to find out if there's water there, but if that's what they're saying.
Or the military never tells you what they're really up to. So.
But it'll evaporate, so they'll never know whether there is water there or not. So the whole thing doesn't really make a lot of sense.
They're trying to. They believe that the moon.
Let's. I'm going to continue. It's on the reverse side. Hope you're enjoying that. And go.
Here, if I could play another clip. I've got a 5-minute clip here, which is a very, very rare clip of John F. Kennedy. It's a speech that you probably will never have heard, and they hope you'll never hear. And it's never been, to my knowledge, never been played on CNN or any of the major media.
What did he talk about?
It's about 5 minutes, 23 seconds long. Can we...
What's the subject?
Well, it's John F. Kennedy's talking about the secret societies that we have to beware of.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, good.
Okay, will you hear this? A word from the President, John F. Kennedy, coming up right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. But we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program. For from that scrutiny comes understanding. And from that understanding comes support or opposition. And both are necessary. I am not asking your newspapers to support an administration, but I am asking your help in the tremendous... tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. For I have complete confidence in the response and dedication of our citizens whenever they are fully informed. I know don't.
Oh, I'm sorry, I have a break in the audio here.
Well, that's an excellent tape.
We'll get it back 1 second.
I not only could not stifle controversy among your readers, I welcome it. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. Very word secrecy is
repugnant. I'm sorry, after running fast, I'll have to kill it there. I had an error in the recording there. Sorry about that. But
well,
you got the gist of it anyway. He's warning the American people about the secret societies and how the press is controlled, and we wonder why he was killed.
Yeah, that sort of explains it all, doesn't it?
It does, really, doesn't it? I mean, he was saying we've been infiltrated.
Oh, yeah, and not only that, he was trying to get rid of the Federal Reserve. He was trying to get, he was doing everything right.
Well, that's all part of what he said, instead of armies attacking us by day, they're the guerrillas by night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can take these terms he coined there any way you like. I think he was trying to warn us. It is a warning speech. I've listened to it several times.
Right.
Maybe I'll play it again next week. The more you hear it, the more you can study the way he lays it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I'm anxious to hear. I'm anxious to hear it much more.
We don't have a minute left. We heard 4 minutes, 2 seconds out of 5.
Yeah, I wanted to hear that. I'd like to go get through that other interview and see if I can find out more about that.
George Green.
Yeah, Green. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I can find more about it. I guess I had just come across it accidentally, and I found it pretty intriguing because David Icke's books talk about exactly what he mentioned. I think, what was that guy who wrote Behold the Pale Horse, Bill Cooper?
Mm-hmm.
Alex Jones has come out with it all the time. So lots of other researchers who are unknowns have come up with the same
information
yeah. about the secret societies running the country, and to be ready for them, be warned. And that's what we're trying to do here. And John F. Kennedy wanted us to warn the people, and we're doing what he was asked us.
I mean, he talked about it in the 60s.
Right.
I think if anybody would like to get a good book on this...
you know what's really sad, though?
Can I finish?
Yeah, well, just let me finish that one thought. It was really sad that it was John Kennedy who was warning us about it in the 60s, and it was Ted Kennedy who was sitting down next to the Mr. Green. Is that what...
I mean, wanting sex with his 14-year-old daughter.
That made me feel...
Well, unfortunately, as great a leader as JFK was... a short time, he was also quite a sexual deviant, so it runs in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, when you check out the history of JFK, he was a very strange man.
Well, he died for his sins, right?
Perhaps. Perhaps he, but he did leave us this as a warning.
Anyway. Johnny, I don't know. To this day, you know, I mean, it's just amazing that the biggest cover-up in history was the JFK assassination until 9/11.
Yeah. That's right, and they covered up the Kennedy with the Warren Commission, and they covered up 9/11 with the final report.
Well, the guy I wanted to, what I wanted to mention was, is that not only the guy who inspired me, and he wrote the book called Rule by Secrecy, was Jim Mars.
Great book, yes.
And Jim Mars, and then Rule by Secrecy, and then he wrote, before that he wrote The Alien Agenda.
That's right, yeah, I've heard that, but I imagine it's a good read of Jim Mars. He's been on your show, right?
Oh, yeah, plenty of it, a number of times. And also he wrote the Inside Job, all right? But, I mean, the many different books that he's written, and they did the JFK movie by Oliver Stone was based on his book,
what was that book?
I forgot.
Oliver Stone's book, I don't know.
No, not
Jim Mars one. It was The Terror Conspiracy, I think.
No, The Terror Conspiracy, but an Inside Job he also did. But the other one was...
My friend JFK.
JFK. That's what it was, JFK.
JFK.
And about his assassination. And and that conspiracy. So, I mean, he stated the Rule by Secrecy first, and the first time I read about it, and he knocked my socks off, and his research was remarkable.
That's actually the book that woke me up to all this stuff, was that book. It was a bookshop that was closing down, and everything was 70% off, so one book
Rule by Secrecy. Yeah.
And bought it for like, I don't know, $7 or less.
Yeah.
Blew my mind, and ever since then, I followed up on everything.
You've never been right since.
No, and... Everything he's talked about has been just blown you away. So we hope to have him back on again in the near future.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing him again.
He's a good guest to have on.
I guess we've covered quite a bit there.
Well, we thank you for being on and bringing us those clips, John. They were very informative, and it shows the history of things.
I just wanted to get off the capture a little bit, because I know it might bore some of the listeners. Unfortunately, we have to keep doing it, folks, again, for the type of reasons John F. Kennedy said, that there is something like a monolithic conspiracy out there, and it's not a conspiracy theory for those who would like to connect those two words. It's completely different. And it's only because of shows like the LA Seal Radio Talk Show and alternative media that we can have any chance of getting the public to start wrecking their brains and tear the books apart, read them. Look, I gave you the website again, conspiracytv.com, and go to the video list at the top.
Wasn't it conspiracy reality TV?
Conspiracy reality TV, sorry. Is that what did I say wrong?
Yeah. Conspiracy reality TV. Yeah, I'll check that out, seriously. So, John, I want to thank you for being on, and thanks for bringing us the stuff.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, folks, thank you very much. And I want to say hello to George Dixon if you're listening. It was an interesting meeting about the weekend.
Yeah.
All right.
We didn't get into talking about that, but maybe we'll do that in the next show.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
See you later. Take care.
Good night.
Yep.
That was John Brennan, and he's our environmental reporter for the LA Steel Show. And we want to thank him for all of his work with us over the last many years. And want to thank you. And you can join us tomorrow night, Thursday night, and Friday night at 8 o'clock. And we discuss...
tomorrow night we'll be discussing more of a spiritual vein of... I'm not exactly sure what the topic will be tomorrow night. I have several ideas. But we will continue tomorrow at 8 o'clock and Friday night at 8 as well. So good night and have a pleasant evening.